Paul Duane's Irish folk horror film, All You Need Is Death, is now playing in select theaters and on digital from XYZ Films. Beyondfest says, "You'll never be able to hear another folk tune without shivering in fear." David Jenkins of Little White Lies calls it grimly refreshing and confident. You can tell that everyone involved in the making really understood and appreciated the assignment. Watch the genuinely horrifying All You Need Is Death, available everywhere you buy movies.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Don't touch that dial. You're tuned in to the Dread Podcast Network.
Welcome to Development Hell. For every horror movie that hits VOD, countless others end up DOA. Development Hell is the podcast dedicated to unearthing these cursed horror productions. We're going to find out what went wrong and then decide if these titles still stand a shot at the green light. I am your host, Josh Korngut. I am a filmmaker in Toronto, Canada. This podcast is a proud member of the Dread Podcast Network.
Fear loves company, so pull up a chair and get lost in Dread TV, the new channel streaming horror movies 24/7 on Dread Central. So what are you waiting for? Dread TV is free. Tune in to dreadcentral.com/dread-tv to start watching now, if you dare.
Blasters. Okay, so welcome everybody to a brand new episode of Development Hell. Today we have a very special episode. We are digging into the fourth and never made Reanimator film entitled House of Reanimator. Today we have a very special returning guest judge. We have Jules Bruin. You may remember Jules from a number of episodes in the past. We did Jaws 3D. We did The Crooked Man. Jules, how's it going?
Hi, it's good. Thanks for having me back.
Oh my God. So for those who may not remember you, how dare they? But can you reintroduce yourself to the Development Hell audience?
Sure. So I'm Jules. I'm Josh's best friend for a very, very, very long time, like 13 years, maybe? Anyways, I am a counselor specializing in addictions, mental health, and trauma based out of Toronto. And I am not really a horror fan, but am forced into the horror world due to Josh.
And what has that journey been like for you?
I'm going to say up and down. Sometimes I love it. And then sometimes it terrorizes me and I have nightmares for days and days. But gotta say, Reanimator was a fun, campy ride. So
yeah. So as I've mentioned earlier, today's episode is going to be featuring the fourth unmade Reanimator film. So Jules, what's your general relationship with the Reanimator movies? Before today, had you heard of them? Had you seen them? What were they to you?
So I kind of heard of it once in the documentary
In Search of Darkness?
In Search of Darkness, thank you, yes. So that's the only time I'd ever heard of them. And I loved the documentary. Shout out to whoever did that. It was phenomenal. And I wanted to see it because of that documentary. They made it seem really kind of gross and creepy and all that stuff. But that's all I've ever known of it. I've never watched it.
Until now.
Until today.
In preparation for this episode, I did give you the homework of checking out the first Reanimator film. So if you don't mind, I might give you a little bit of backstory on where this the story for Reanimator came from.
I would love that.
Yeah, so it was originally written as a story by the author H.P. Lovecraft. Are you familiar with the dude?
Of course. I did not know this was an H.P. Lovecraft story.
It is. What's your relationship or your impressions of what H.P. Lovecraft is?
So I'm not a big H.P. Lovecraft person, obviously, because I'm not really a horror person. But I know how renowned he is and how important he is to horror and all things sort of monster. But I also know that I think he's got some racism in him and some Nazi stuff. So not so happy with that. But yeah,
about Nazi stuff. It could be, but not to the best of my knowledge. But definitely a racist.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, an interesting fellow, racism
aside.
It's hard to put racism aside. So Lovecraft is best known for the creation of what is known as the Cthulhu mythos.
Right. Right.
So if you've ever heard of Cthulhu, this is where it comes from. H.P. Lovecraft is known for creating really frightening, intangible, otherworldly, intergalactic evils. So evils that are so grandiose and so monstrous and so like on a different level that they're impossible to describe, that they're impossible to comprehend. And in a lot of the stories, if people do end up comprehending these great monstrosities, they would go insane because the human mind is just not built for this kind of stuff. A lot of them have evils that are deep in outer space, in like the great unknown. A lot of the other stuff sometimes take place in the depths of the ocean. The big thing for H.P. Lovecraft was the fear of the unknown. And I think you kind of get itty bitty bits of that in Reanimator.
Totally. That's really cool. Because when I watched Reanimator, it felt like a take on Frankenstein. But now sort of knowing that lens, it kind of is a cooler add to the concepts.
Well, it's funny that you say that because H.P. Lovecraft actually wrote Reanimator, or Herbert West Reanimator, as the short story is titled, as a satire on Frankenstein in a way, which makes me think he was probably just a woman hater and was like, a woman wrote a good, scary story? How dare she?
Miss Shelley. Yeah.
It's just my impression of the situation.
Yeah.
But his short story, which is Herbert West Reanimator, came out in October of 1921, and then was released in subsequent issues until June 1922. So it was a serialized story, a part of the amateur production or publication house Homebrew. Oh. And then, of course, it was the basis for the 1985 horror film Reanimator and its sequels. So yeah, Reanimator was followed by two sequels. We had Bride of Reanimator 5 years later. And then in 2003, there was a Sci-Fi Channel sequel known as Beyond Reanimator.
Oh.
So this is a franchise, hun. There's a lot going on in the world of the Reanimator. Before we get, into the weeds of the first film, I'm wondering, in your viewpoint, as someone that watched it for the first time recently, what is it about? What would you say Reanimator is? What's the synopsis?
Synopsis as best as I can is, we start off at a teaching hospital and there's this like young, plucky, going to be doctor who is dating the dean's daughter. But he's really great and has a lot of potential. So it's like, okay. But one of the teachers there is like kind of a bad old man who like has very like thinks he's like God, basically. And then he's the best doctor ever. And then a new guy comes from, he was doing like some tests in Switzerland and he comes there to be a student, but he already has lots of ideas and he's like fighting all the doctors. Like, no, you actually don't know what's going on. And it turns out he's doing that because he's created a serum that can reanimate dead people. So he then reanimates dead cats to show people like, look, it can reanimate. And this young plucky doctor and him, which is his name's Mr. West, get together and they try to reanimate humans. That's a mistake because when they reanimate humans, they're crazy. And that's a bad word. They're wild and wanting to beat you up and kill you.
Yeah.
And horror ensues. And that's the
concept. Jules, that's pretty damn good, actually, thanks. I have to say. Yeah, I think you did a great job. Woo. So originally, it was devised to be a stage show by Stuart Gordon, who did direct the film. It didn't end up really going down that way. And later it was developed into a half-hour television pilot. The script for that half-hour television pilot was sort of reworked and did become this feature film. So Reanimator was the first collaboration between director Stuart Gordon and actor Jeffrey Combs. They would also go on to create and release From Beyond, a film that was released about a year later in 1986. So this quickly became a cult classic. You can't really go far in the world of horror without sort of jumping into the topic of Reanimator. Okay. So you said you heard about it for the first time watching In Search of Darkness, or was it the first time you like saw bits and pieces of it?
No, I'd never heard of it before.
You'd never heard of it before? Or
it's possible you've talked about it and I just didn't even like take it in, but I...
Yeah, your horror experience is narrowed a little bit to your friends that like yes. horror, because that's where you're like, that's where it's being forced on you from.
Yes.
And this isn't one, I think I might have been late to the game to Reanimator. I think I may have seen it a little bit later in life, so I was never like obsessed with it. If I had seen it when I was younger, maybe that would have happened. So this first film, released October 18th, 1985, grossed about $2 million in North America. And its budget was, I think, like under $1 million. So it did quite well. It was this indie horror phenomenon and developed pretty soon into a cult classic. It stars Jeffrey Combs as Herbert West, who you probably could have guessed I've got it for. He's truly my type.
I knew you would be in love with him, but I even thought he was hot. And I'm not normally into your type.
Yeah, see, you sent me a little thing being like, oh, he's so hot. And I really thought you were just like...
No, I really thought he was hot.
Really?
I did.
So we would all agree that... Because I don't know if my listeners know what my type is. But would you say this falls into the category of my typical type?
Exactly your typical type.
So what is my typical type, like, would you say?
Like pretty, nerdy, brown hair. Think Tobey Maguire. Think... Harry Potter, what's his real name?
Daniel Radcliffe,
sorry. Yeah. You know, all those, Elijah Wood, like these are...
Yeah, they have a certain kind of floopy, floppy brown hair.
Floopy brown hair.
And glasses.
You like a glasses moment. Yeah.
Yeah.
But you like them sort of like, not pretty, but I don't know what to say.
Call them these pale, pretty.
Or, I don't know, there's something about... No, I
tired, like, maybe.
Tired is probably better.
Like they look like they've been smoking too much and they haven't been sleeping enough
because they've seen something, you know.
Yeah, fairly recently they've seen something recently and it didn't go well for them.
No.
Yeah, so definitely in love with Mr. Herbert West. Mm-hmm. Problematic babe. And this film also happens to star Bruce Abbott. So Bruce plays Dr. Dan Cain, who you were talking, the sort of plucky up-and-comer who gets thrust into this world of... Yeah, so Bruce Paul Abbott is, I think, mostly known for doing these horror films. So he was in this one, he was in the sequel, and I believe he was also in Beyond, which was the follow-up with the same team. And then the last,
like Bruce Campbell, which I thought was kind of interesting. I don't know. I like saw.
He looked like Bruce Campbell.
I thought he looked a little bit like him. I don't know, like a young That's Bruce weird. Campbell. Okay, whatever, fine.
Yeah, I guess young Bruce Campbell was like strapping and very leading,
like jaw, young man. Really big jaw. I don't know. There was a similarity to me, but anyways,
this guy was a little too pretty for Bruce Campbell, in my opinion. But I like the comparison. Same first name. Yeah. And then the third noteworthy star, I would say, is Barbara Crampton. Mm-hmm. So Barbara Crampton came up as a bit of a scream queen in the 80s. She starred in Reanimator. She's in tons and tons of horror movies. She's in your favorite, Chopping Mall. A classic. And then she's also had a bit of a resurgence, more than a bit of a resurgence in the horror world over the last 10 years, starting with her supporting role in...
You're Next.
Good job, Jules.
I Googled it.
You Googled it.
I Googled her because I was like, how do I know her? And then I realized she's in like a million things, but also
she's like a big cultural icon, like, right now. In the horror world, she's really active right now.
Shout out to my brother, Hendrik. He was over while I was watching it, and I was like, this girl's so familiar, and he was so offended that I didn't know who she was, because he was like, you need to know her. She's like a horror queen.
She's the horror queen for sure, and she still looks so incredible, and she is just blindingly beautiful in this movie.
Stunning in this movie.
Yeah. I do think she had some regrets surrounding this performance, and I can imagine why.
Around, like, having a exploited, disembodied head, like, stuck on your boob.
Yeah. She was exploited in this film outright, and she didn't return for the sequel. Can't imagine who I am.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, as I mentioned, according to his letters, Lovecraft wrote the story as a parody of Mary Shelley's Frankenstein. And there are numerous references to Frankenstein throughout, as well as hints of poetry of Samuel Taylor Coleridge, which was what Shelley was known to do in her story. How did you feel walking away from this film?
So I will say the one thing that I want to know is, like, was it deliberately silly? Like, no.
Okay, you know what? I can't say that. Maybe yes? I don't know.
So Cuckoo Town Banana Pants that I felt like it had to be, was it winking? Like, you know, when like at the very end, when like all he has all these like zombie people and like then the guts are like strangling him. I was like, this is like beyond, like,
yeah, it you're right. Story? It is very heightened. And in the very first scene where it's like a cold open, we don't understand what's going on. And he's it looks like he's killed maybe his professor, and they said, what have you done? You've killed him. And he said, no, I gave him life.
Yes.
And then it snaps into the credits. And I was like, oh, yes, I'm here for this movie. Maybe it is supposed to be heightened or kind of campy based on some of these things that we're talking about now, because it is wacky.
Yeah, like, the performances even to me were, like, so over the top. That's why I said it was kind of soapy. Because, you know, it felt like they were being so, like, I don't know. Like every time the really bad guy was, like, I don't know if he was, like, hypnotizing people or something, but he was like, you should be afraid. Like, it was so ridiculously over the top. I don't know.
It's kind of, like, Hammer horror-esque. You know, it's, like, very big, very theatrical. I don't know. I think it's probably a combo of... Sure. It being very low budget, it being 1985, it being the genre, but I think maybe you're right. I think there is some self-aware elements to it all.
I found it very silly, and in a good way. I don't mean that in a bad way. I mean, like, I felt like I was laughing with it, but...
Was it laughing? This is the question.
I was laughing. I laughed out loud. Like, even there was one quote where he said, when he was like, you killed my cat, like, you could have left me a note. And he was sort of like, what would I say? Cat's dead. Details talk later.
Yeah.
That's a really funny line.
Really weird. I felt really bad for Barbara Crampton's character, Megan, in that sequence. Yeah. So there's a scene where Herbert West shows up to Dan Kane's house looking to rent a room. Mm-hmm. And Dan Kane's girlfriend, Megan, Barbara Crampton, is there and is clearly giving him the signals, being like, don't just accept this guy. Mm-hmm. Like, he's so weird. He's going to kill your cat. Like, give it a think. And, of course, the fucking guy is just like, well, I can't listen to my girlfriend. Here, give me your money. You're in. I was like, wow. First of all, like, was it that easy? Because you see this in movies all the time where, like, if you're renting an apartment in the 80s or in the 70s, it was very easy.
There's no first and last.
There's no checking.
Nothing.
And from what my mom... And my dad have both told me, because they were renting in Toronto in the 80s. Uh-huh. It was apparently harder back then. Like, it was common practice to, like, bribe, to, like, give people extra money to, like, secure apartments. Like, it was just what you had to do.
That's really funny.
So this is not how it was, I don't think. But
that makes sense, because honestly, like, it felt ridiculous. I once got an apartment, like, a landlord wanted to check my bank to confirm that I didn't have any, like, NSFs.
What are NSFs?
Like, not enough funds or whatever. No.
I mean, that seems a little invasive, but...
I know, exactly, but I wanted the apartment, so I...
Yeah, if you want the apartment, you gotta get the apartment. Yeah. And that's exactly what happened here. Mr. West really wanted the apartment. He says, I'm going to be quiet. I'm not going to get in your way. I won't kill your cat. And so
I love Rufus. In. I had a cat named Rufus when I was a little kid, and it felt very connected to the cat.
Oh, yeah. The cat's name was Rufus. And I was confused the whole time. I was like, that is a dog's name. That is not a cat's name. But go off. But go apparently off. I was wrong. You did have a cat named Rufus. So
I really did.
What the fuck do I know? What did we think of Mr. Jeffrey Combs in the role of Herbert West? How did you feel about it?
So I thought he was like so much fun. Like I loved him in the role. I thought he was, but again, I thought he was incredibly silly. I thought he was like really over the top. So again, like if they were going for serious, I'm supposed to be scared, not a great job. But if they're going for campy, winky 80s horror, on the money.
Yeah. And so do you have a theory of which they were trying to go for?
I really thought it was supposed to be campy because I think Herbert West was like such a great character too. When he like hits him across the back and he's like, plagiarizer. Like
he's such a little freak.
Yeah. I just thought.
A dirty little freak. Well,
yeah. You're getting into it. No, just.
Whoa, I am. That did just happen.
Yeah, it's fine. He's fine. And even the like the disembodied head like gonna eat her pussy was like, sorry, can I say that word?
I think you can.
Okay, well I did it. Like was the most ridiculous thing I've ever seen in my life, and I was like, the director and the writer had to be like giggling backstage.
I you just could not get it. We will get into that ending sequence at some point, but like you could not do that today. I was so into. I forgot about that scene, and then I got to it and I was like, oh god, Jules is not gonna appreciate this. And nor should you. It's nothing to be appreciated. That poor, and she must have been topless for hours. She was probably so cold.
Hours. Yeah, it looked like a cold room, you know. And I also, another reason why I think it's campy, but maybe this is just like a me thing, is Megan is the character's name, I'm pretty sure. Yeah. Keeps calling her father daddy, which I hate any adults that calls their father daddy. Like, it brings up stuff.
It's weird.
Me.
Yeah.
And she would say it like, daddy, daddy, no, daddy, 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 please. I was like, this has to be on. Like, why?
I think in the 80s it was more of a thing because I have lots. And as you say that, like, I can think of tons of horror movies that do the same thing.
Okay. Okay, fair.
Calling their father, like their older father's daddy in these movies. I want to argue and say it maybe have been more of a thing at the time. But also this movie was gross, so I don't know.
Yeah, the creep factor of the saying daddy too much was like, I don't know. Like, daddy will understand. I'll just tell daddy. He'll understand.
Let's get into her now. So yeah. Barbara Crampton in the role of Megan Halsey. I would not say this was the most active a female character has ever been in the history of horror. What do you think about that?
No, it's not. We're not passing any Bechdel tests here.
No. Absolutely not. She was extremely passive, always in trouble.
Always in
paralysis. Never able to do anything sort of for herself.
And always kind of stupid. Like, everything was just too scary for her. Even when she went to like see her father, when he was like, she went inside and she just went like, oh, and then like the doctor had to be like, he's been lobotomized. I was like, man, she doesn't know anything. She can't even like, just nothing. I don't know.
Yeah. And when her father gets turned into a bit of a zombie, and the other, and the man that's trying to treat him before he lobotomizes him is like, this is what we're going to do with the brain. And she's like, I don't want to know. Just take him away. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to even know. Like, she just was such a, I felt bad. It was such a bad character. Obviously, this was like so written and directed by men. They were just like, we just need a pair of tits to be around. Yes. You know, that's what it felt like.
Yes. And they got more than that. They got an icon in the making, but they definitely did not. They did not show her justice.
Utilize her. No, not at all.
Not at all. Which is too bad because it was such an interesting movie. And if they had done more with her, it could have been like even better.
Well, and I was kind of excited because at the beginning with the whole cat and whatever, she walked in on the cat coming back to life. So I thought she was going to be a part of this somehow. I thought she was going to be kind of the moral compass to these doctors.
Yeah.
So I was like kind of, ooh, intrigued. And then it was like, nope, she's just like around like...
Or bring her into the fold. Like, she can help. Like, that's she can help with the experiments that's and, like, help you kill people and, like, bring her in. Oh, but no, they couldn't. But you know what? Why would you? Because I have a theory that Dan and Herbert had a thing going on. Well, I don't. It's not a real theory. But why don't we get into the character of Dan Kane? So would you say that Dan Kane, or Dr. Dan Kane, was the protagonist of this film?
You see, I think so. Even though, I don't know. Because Howard West, is that Howard?
Herbert,
thank you, sorry. Herbert West was the smart one. And also, when the antagonist is doing really antagonist-y things, it's more to West than to the other guy.
I kind of feel like West is also a bit of the antagonist, but at the same time, he's very proactive in making things happen.
Yeah,
so.
I thought he was kind of, but I thought it was like a switcheroo. Like, you thought he was going to be the antagonist, and then actually he's like
he takes the reins himself.
Yeah,
He's very decisive. He like gets what he needs to get done. I don't understand completely why Dan goes along with it. Why do you think it is? Like, why do you think he so quickly gets Dan to come along for the ride?
If this was real, this like serum, you could like, by testing it even more, you could save lives.
Oh yeah, and these are doctors. Like Dan, yeah. I think was it Dan? Does he like try to save someone too much, and the doctor's like, a good doctor knows when to give up.
Yes, that's one of the first scenes.
Dan
does the right thing by going to the dean and being like, he's discovered this thing and I've seen it. It really works and we should explore it. And the dean's like, you're crazy and can't be with my daughter, you know? So I think he was like, you know, he was really trying to do the good of this reanimation.
Yeah, well, I think you're trying to, maybe they're trying to show like two sort of opposite ends of the spectrum here. You have one man who like all he cares about is saving people and helping people and like using his powers for good. Yes. And that's why he's interested in the serum. And then on the other hand, you have someone that's really like driven and passionate about like science at, you know, and willing to put people in danger for the sake of progress.
That's right.
And sort of they both come at it from two very different perspectives, but they wanted enough to sort of pursue it together.
Yeah.
I felt like there was some subtextual, non-on-purpose, homosexual dynamics up there.
I did not feel that, but now that you say it, I totally get it. Especially with the whole Megan hating him and being like, I don't like her. The jealousy. I don't want him around. He makes my skin crawl, like all that kind of stuff. Like that. If there is a gay subtext, I would totally get that even more.
Oh, there's a scene where the first person, I forget the name, but the first corpse that they bring back to life breaks down a door and accidentally kills or almost kills her father.
Oh, he does kill him.
He does, yeah, but I don't think that's what kills him. I think he then attacks him more and more.
Oh, yes, you're right. Sorry, yes.
And in the process of that older man getting murdered, like, Dr. Dan and Dr. Herbert are, like, kind of collapsed onto each other, and, like, they're holding each other, and they're, like, very intimate. Do you remember this at all?
I do, but I didn't notice that, and I guess I wasn't, like, looking good enough.
And they're, like, so quick to sort of go all in together, and to, like, murder together, and to try to save, I don't know, it happened so quickly. And also, for someone that's creepy, which Herbert West is, they were very quick to make creepy people in this movie be creepy towards women, and there was not an instance where he was creepy towards her. In fact, he just hated her. He was just like, get out of my room,
thought she was useless. And to be fair, she was in the movie, right? She was useless. But you're totally right. Like, the other creepy guy was like, she's so beautiful, she's aged so well. Like,
yeah, it's terrifying.
He needed to go.
I thought he was really scary. Do you remember the name of this doctor? Should I look it up really quick?
Look it up, because I don't remember at all. But I will say, did he have power of hypnosis? Because it twice looked like he was hypnotizing people.
The doctor?
The really teacher? Bad doctor, because like the teacher doctor, yeah. Because at first, he was like with the dean, and the dean was like, no, no, like, he's a fine boy. No, no, like, he's a really like plucky youngster or whatever. And then he, like, there was like this big scene just on his face where his eyes are really wide, and he's like, he's dangerous. He will hurt your daughter.
Oh, like, I don't remember, but you're probably right.
And then another time he did it with Mr. West, he was like, you will be my assistant and I will take credit. And then, like, he starts crying because he's like gonna do it, and then he kills him.
See, I don't agree. I think that he just knew that he was being blackmailed in that second situation.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
He was like, you can either give me complete credit for all this or you're going to jail. Okay, so his name is in real life David Gale, and he plays Dr. Carl Hill. Dr. Carl Hill, I think, does become sort of the antagonistic monster in this movie.
Yeah.
He is the famous or very iconic, like, head on a tray. Like, that's kind of what he's known for.
And fabulous.
Famous part of the poster. And I think he's, like, genuinely pretty scary as a severed head in moments.
Yeah, but
the performance is, like, fairly chilling.
It is chilling, but then there's moments of, like, real goofiness where the body's, like, hitting a wall and stuff.
Yeah, definitely. But, like, there are moments where he's, like, so pissed and just, like, so full of anger. I don't know. He freaks me out. And then that character is in the second one. And the second one I have seen and I rewatched for this. Definitely a low, like, not at the same bar as the first.
Okay.
But he's scary in that too. There's just, the guy really brings it, David Gale.
Is he a disembodied head again in the second one?
Yes. Yeah. I believe, yes. So thank you, David Gale. I saw that his name was David Gale and I got kind of confused because my grandmother was on a reality cooking show in, like, the late 90s in Canada called Loving Spoonfuls. And I remember the host of that show, his name was David Gale. And I was like, could it be the same man? It was not the same man.
I know, I don't think so. But would be a real fall from grace for him.
I don't know, Canadian actor that did this, like, weird thing in the 90s, having done this one weird horror movie in the 80s, it could have been.
True. And for folks, not just your grandmother was in it, Josh also had a starring
role. Oh, my God. So, yeah, if you go on to Prime Video and look up Loving Spoonfuls, it is my first.
And the guy was weirdly flirting with your grandmother. It's very uncomfortable.
Yeah, and he's very gay, too. So I think that was just sort of his move. I think it was like his, like, so yeah, it was his thing. I don't know.
I mean, do whatever you want. You're an adult.
Yeah, so as it progresses, did you ever feel scared watching this film? No way.
I'm going to go with that. You know what? I felt, like, creeped out when he sculled, like, capped that guy in the teaching that, like, grossed me out. Capped, sorry. Scalped is what I meant to say. Oh,
capped is better.
Capped him.
And that was, like, just in, like, the classroom, right? That was just,
yeah, that freaks out.
Like, a gross in-class.
Unnerved me, I will say. And I felt very unnerved with the head sucking on the tits, but that was probably for not
that was heinous. Scared.
Yeah, it was just from being, like,
heinous in the anus, which I've been told I can't say. What do you think?
The anus. It sounds like a weird, like, fissure in your butt.
A fissure?
You know, like, it's a cut. It's like a little cut.
Oh, I wish you hadn't said that.
Yeah, sorry.
I thought you meant, like, a fisherman's friend.
Oh, that sounds spicy.
Or, like, the fisherman from I Know What You Did Last Summer.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, well, I Know What You Did Last Summer, the TV show right now?
I do, but I haven't watched it, yeah.
I've only seen one episode and didn't like it, but our co-friend Samantha is really into it. I'm just mad that there's no fisherman in it.
No, what? There has to be a fisherman in it.
I don't know. I've not seen very much of it, but to what I understand, there kind of isn't. It's just like
that bums me out.
Teens being scared.
And sexy, probably.
Yeah, I would say so too. But I have read the book, and to what I recall, the book is not really a slasher either. That was kind of just something that happened for the 90s movie. So,
oh, okay.
Maybe that's how it's supposed to be. So, yeah, there was supposed to be a number of unmade sequels to this over the years, including what we're going to talk about today, which is House of Reanimator. But there was also going to be another fourth in development by the name of Island of Reanimator, which was going to sort of have a an island of Dr. Moreau sort of inspiration energy.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah.
Because that movie was wild.
I've never seen it. Tell me about it.
I've never seen it either. I've heard that. How did this get made? And it's such an infamous movie.
Okay. Is it racist? Because it gives me racist energy from afar.
No, it's not racist. It's just like, it's a Marlon Brando film and he was like, own the script. And like, they made a documentary about it because it was like,
I've heard this episode.
Yeah.
I feel like that was not that. I feel like that was that, like the 90s remake or something.
The
one that they were talking about was like original. In the 90s, and I feel like there was like an older
film. Right. Okay, there probably was an original. You're right. I think this was the remake. That's the one that's like crazy.
I did listen to that. How did this get made? And it sounds insane. And who was talking to him? Some girl that was in it was
Faruza Balk. And he's like, don't worry, we got paid. Like, this is nothing. This movie sucks. Like, don't
worry. Yeah, she wanted to talk to him about their roles. She was like, can we like get into it? Can I talk to you about, you know, what you're thinking? And he's like, absolutely not. Like, listen to me, baby. Like, this does not matter. This is bullshit.
He literally didn't read any of his lines. Like that.
What a dick.
Yeah.
Well, it did sound pretty bad.
I definitely want to watch it.
So as I mentioned, yes, there was a number two, there was a number three, and there was also a Reanimator the Musical, an American stage play of it that first happened in 2011 at the Steve Allen Theater in Los Angeles, California. It starred Graham Skipper, who's a friend of the Dread Podcast Network originally, and eventually would go on to win the LA Weekly Award for Best Musical. Variety at the time said that they had never seen anything like it since Little Shop of Horrors.
That's what I assumed it would be like, is like a Little Shop of Horrors mixed with an Evil Dead the Musical moment.
Yeah, so I wanted to get into that. It sounds to me like Reanimator the Musical is to LA what Evil Dead the Musical was to Toronto. If I'm not fully incorrect, I think Evil Dead the Musical began in Toronto. Like, I think this is its home.
Oh.
Yeah, did you ever get to see it?
I didn't, and I'm mad I didn't get to see it because it was such a phenomenon.
You never saw it? That's crazy to me.
I know. It was such a, like, everyone did it. It was such a phenomenon, but I just kind of missed the boat. Yeah. I'm mad I did.
That's so funny. I loved it. And in fact, I remember I used to listen to the music, like, fairly, like, I had that going on in the background. I'm a big fan of Evil Dead the Musical. I think it kind of went to off-Broadway for a little while and just like kind of didn't happen, which is too bad. But it's really good, and it does sort of come back every once in a while. I think it's happening in Oshawa at some point. And
I would go.
I know someone that I believe is in it. Her name is Allie Chapel. She is in the horror world. We are a stan, and I would see her in it. So
keep that
on the docket, Oshawa. So can I maybe give you a bit of a seminar on the unmade House of Reanimator?
I would love a seminar.
Holy crap. Keep it in your pants.
Okay.
So director of part two and part three, Brian Uzina, I'm sorry if I'm not saying that correct, originally was developing a more of a Dr. Moreau inspired sequel that was going to be titled Island of Reanimator, but that was never meant to be. And then years and years passed by, and a whole new fourth film was in development by the title of House of Reanimator. And the basic gist for House of Reanimator was that Dr. Herbert Rest was going to be reanimating the President of the United States of America.
Oh my God.
Yeah, so he was going to be in the White House. Yeah, so this was going to be like a White House set, House of Reanimator, and it was going to supposedly be the first in a brand new trilogy of Herbert West stories. So Brian Uzina was attached, writer Dennis Paoli was also on board to produce, and I believe write. And do you have any guesses of who they had in mind, or maybe even officialized, to play the role of the president?
Oh my God, no, I would love. I'm very excited to find out, though.
William H. Macy. Was
what?
Yeah, to what I understand. I don't know how official this is, but this is what has been reported.
Never guessed William H. Macy.
Yeah, and this was 2006, and it was very, very much going to be inspired by the Bush administration.
Okay.
Because the creators and writers were very anti-Bush. They were very anti the Iraq War. Yeah. And that was all kind of what was inspiring this new sort of reimagining of Reanimator, which is kind of funny because, as sad it is to say, right now where we're sitting, the Bush administration kind of feels quaint in comparison to what we've just survived with the whole Trump fiasco.
I gotta say, though, I agree. And I think it's because Bush was just like better at being a nice face. Whereas if you really go into the things that he actually did.
Oh, horrendous. Yeah. Horrendous.
He was just like a better figurehead.
It was less trustful to survive, though.
Yeah, like, absolutely.
Like as a civilian, like as just a citizen, just hanging out, like, I was less concerned for the apocalypse on a daily basis.
Absolutely. I always thought Bush was like a silly, dumb little man. And it was what was scary was going on behind the scenes. But
yeah.
Whereas Trump is a horrible piece of garbage monster.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's why thinking about this as like a satire or sort of a reflection on the Bush administration kind of is like, well, girl, just you wait another 10 years. Yeah. And one of the reasons that this iteration didn't actually get made is because the Barack Obama administration kind of took over, and it just like didn't feel like the right time for this production, and then it just never happened, which is kind of too bad. There was some quasi-official promotional art that we will be adding to our socials that you'll be able to check out.
Ooh.
Yeah. And so as I was saying, so the producers, even at the time, were kind of worried about ruffling feathers over the White House themes, and they didn't know if people were going to take it as just general political satire or if people were going to get like really angry about it.
At all, so, like, yeah, okay. Like, not our president.
Well, yeah, which was even, you know, an issue back then to a lesser extent. But can you imagine like a zombie, like a scary zombie William H. Macy as W. Bush?
I think it's hilarious and amazing. And I'm really mad that didn't happen.
I know, me too. And to what I believe, this was going to be the first time that director Stuart Gordon, who directed the first film, which we have seen recently, was coming back to actually produce it. So the second film was not directed by Stuart Gordon. It was by the producer of the first one, David Yozima. I'm so sorry, everyone, that I'm saying that wrong. And then that person also directed the third. And the third one's from 2003 and takes place in a prison. So Herbert West is like a prison doctor, I believe, and doing weird experiments. I could be wrong. I saw it in 2003, so like don't
I kinda mad at like me. The concept of that.
Yeah, it's a prison sequel. It's like all very contained, which is I like a bottle episode.
Me too, especially in a horror movie.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Can you think of any like good bottled horror movies off the top of your head?
Well, I you know, the first thing that I thought of, it's funny, is well, one, Shutter Island, even though it's not really horror movie. You thought of it, but not that it's great, but also Halloween H2O feels a little bit like that too.
Kind of, like a little bit. I mean, it's all like, there's a lot of the mini locations within. I would say something like Cube is a little bit more in line with that.
Really that, yeah.
Yeah, maybe kind of Dead End.
Yep, totally.
Saw is a big one, for sure.
Yeah.
That kind of thing. It's easier to do with plays than it is with film. You might as well just do other locations.
You're kind of forced to do it in plays.
Brian Uzina. Yeah, as I said, Brian Uzina is the one that was the spearhead for the first film. He's sort of the reason the first film got made. He was the one that's like a big genre fan and really wanted to get Reanimator done as a feature, but he did not direct it. He did go on to direct some interesting horror in the 80s after Reanimator, including a very bizarre 1989, like, satire horror by the name of Society. Have you heard of that?
No.
Yeah, I don't know much about it. I've never seen it, although our sister podcast right here on the Dread Podcast Network, Kim and Kat Stay Alive Maybe, did a really good episode on Society lately, and you can check that out without actually having to see it.
Yeah,
there's a scene in Society the movie where like a butthole has a face. Is all I need to say to you.
I never needed to know that, but thank you.
Yeah, butthole face.
Better than seeing it in real life. Yeah.
It's a butthole face and it's come to you from outer space and it's like pretty scary. Yeah. Before we wrap up, there was going to be the original sequel to Reanimator, which was being thought out by Stuart Gordon. Mm-hmm. And it was going to have a very similar plot to House of Reanimator, although in the late 80s, early 90s, they would have done the same thing, but with the Ronald Reagan administration instead of the George Bush administration.
I think that would almost be funnier.
I don't know very much about the Reagan administration. I know he's no good, though.
Horrible piece of garbage. And his wife was horrible, too.
I don't like to hear that. I don't like to hear that.
Yeah, you know, whatever. But he just had a funnier voice, so I feel like it would help with the funniness.
Do you just know that because of Family Guy?
No, I mean, I know what Ronald Reagan sounds like.
I don't. I could not tell you.
Really?
Maybe not. Maybe if I heard it, I'd be like, oh, yeah.
Yeah, okay, you would, sure. For sure. I'm not going to do it because that's going to be horrible. I'm not doing it.
I would love to have Jules Bruin doing a Ronald Reagan impersonation on this podcast on this yeah, on this day.
Yeah, no. It's not going to happen.
All right. So, anyway. Jules, on a scale from 1 to 10, what would... Oh, no, let's say out of 5. What would you give the original Reanimator?
So, okay. I like to give a scale on like how much I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
So I'm going to give it like a 3.5 that I did enjoy it.
That's pretty classique. Would you ever watch the sequels?
Yes. Now that you said the way you explained them. Yeah. I assumed that Bride of was just going to be like that poor woman getting like naked again, but with reanimation goo in her. But
no.
Not, then I'd watch. Oh, can I tell you one little thing, fact that I have for you?
Yeah.
So again, my brother was like, do you know how they got the liquid to be so glowy?
And that's a really good question.
And he was like, it's the insides of a glow stick.
Oh, of course.
I know, right?
I mean, but I still don't know how they would have, I still don't know the inner workings of the inside of a glow stick, to be honest.
No, but I mean, all they did was got a bunch of glow sticks and just opened them up so that it would be glowy.
It does look exactly like
it that. It does. It made me laugh. I was like, of course that's what it is.
I don't know about the first one, but the second one actually had its world premiere at the Toronto International Film Festival in 1990.
Whoa.
I know. Isn't that cool?
That is cool. What would you give it out of 10? Out of 5, sorry.
I have to give this one a 4.
Mm-hmm.
I have to give this one a 4. It's just such a classic. Right? Yeah. It's just so good. Yeah. And it's scary, it's funny, it's silly, it's just, and the cast is so good.
And honestly, the effects are so great. Like, I just...
And the effects are incredible.
Yeah.
I'm going to look this up right now. So there was a famous special effects person from the 80s that went by the name of Screaming Mad George. Okay. And I think he did the effects for this. Give me a sec. Mm-hmm. Maybe not, because I'm not finding it on Wikipedia. But yeah, he did do Society, and I feel like maybe I think he did this as well. Yeah, there was this famous like special effects artist from the 80s that went by the name of Screaming Mad George that did a bunch of these 80s horror movies. And he's definitely someone that you want to investigate, because he's quite the personality.
Yeah, wow, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, I looked it up. Who did the special effects for Reanimator? It says Toby Dublin. Dublin.
Well, we don't know her.
Yeah, so. Sorry. Never mind.
Sorry, Screaming Mad
George. Bull.
Yeah, George. Wow, I almost insulted him. That was bad.
How dare you?
How okay, well, yeah. dare I? Yeah, so that's it pretty much for House of Reanimator. Do we think in our hearts of hearts, because what we decide goes,
of course,
that this is ever going to happen? Do we think we're going to get to see House of Reanimator in the future?
You know, I would say no, but I think because it is such a classic, I could see them knowing that it's going to get views because of this, like, cult mm-hmm. consciousness of it all. Mm-hmm. So I think it's possible that they could kind of revamp the franchise.
I think so, too. I don't think we're ever going to see House of Reanimator or any right. kind of canon sequel, mm-hmm. but I'm absolutely flabbergasted that we haven't seen a reboot or a remake of some kind yet on this classic franchise. We've seen things a whole lot less famous get revisited. So I don't know why this one hasn't yet. And I would like to see it happen. Yeah. And the inevitability that this does get rebooted, who do we want to see in the role of Mr. Herbert West?
Oh my gosh.
I know, it's a good question, right? It's we kind of got question. Some of these answers earlier when we thought about Joshua Korngut's type.
You're right. I guess it could be any of them. I mean, I think that out of those guys, Elijah Wood would do is really good.
Elijah Wood would do so good. Although he's supposed to be a student, right? He's supposed to be like
right. But it's a medical student, so they are older.
I know, but Elijah Wood is like 45. Yeah. I don't know who young people are these days.
You know what could be that the guy who was in, I think he's so hot. He was in the new Halloween Kills. He's like the boyfriend in Halloween Kills.
Oh, yeah. That's and an interesting pick.
He's also in Love, the show. Anyways.
You knew of him from Love? That's so funny.
Yeah. I mean, not Love. Oh, my God, not Love. Sorry. I meant You, the show, which is way more embarrassing.
I'm going to say, honestly, Jules, that's less embarrassing.
Thank you. Okay, good. Yeah. Yes, I really liked this season of You. He was in it.
You know who I think should do it?
Yeah, please.
All right, I have to look this person up because I don't know the name, but I think it's going to be a good one. Are you excited?
Of course.
Are you, like, nervous as it's going to blow your pick out of the water?
I mean, I know it's going to, but I'm not going to be offended.
Okay, I keep putting this person in all of my reboots, but I think, I don't know why I see it. Have you watched the new One Day at a Time on Netflix?
I know you are, but I haven't, yeah.
Okay, so there's like the queer daughter on it. Her name in real life is Isabella Gomez. If you know her, look into her. She's incredible. Uh-huh. I think she would be a really good, Henrietta West or something.
Oh, I love that you're making it a girl and I suck at making it.
I know, right? Aren't you embarrassed that you didn't think of it first?
You did that to me because you were like, what's my type? I hate you. I also want to say, sorry, that the guy that I was saying his name is Dylan Arnold. So just so that
people... Oh, I can only see him in the Halloween movies, which I didn't think he was so incredible in, but...
No, he was just really good in You, and then I rewatched the Halloween movie recently and I was like, he's like a fun horror guy.
You rewatched Halloween Kills?
I did.
Oh my god. So
I know.
People are not aware because the episode didn't come out. But me and Jules did end up seeing Halloween Kills together. It's a very polarizing movie in the world of horror.
That's interesting. I thought it was so fun.
I loved it too. I gave it a solid 3.5 stars on Dread Central officially. Wow. So I can't take that back.
Right. It's in fucking paper. Well, not paper, but
it's in blood. Same.
Yeah,
it's in blood. It's in bloody blood.
I definitely threw my vibe. It was fun. It was a fun movie.
I love that it held up on your second watch.
Yeah, it did. Totally held up.
And it wasn't just like us having fun in a movie theater, which could have been the thing.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
Jules, I'm done.
Okay.
If you want to be found in the world, where would you be found?
You could find
me. How would we find you?
I mean, you could find me on Instagram if you want to. It's a very long username. It's Jules Rules Your World, but with an underscore in between every word.
I love that. And is your spelt like normally your?
It is. But it's not, sorry. Okay, okay. It's not, yeah, it's the regular, it's the right.
It's not you are.
No.
Yeah.
It's yeah.
Jules Rules Your World. And if you live in Toronto, that might sound familiar. You may have seen that in public bathrooms. Yes, I tag it
places like a child.
You know what I write? Books.
Oh,
you want to explain that story to the developmental audience?
Our friend, I don't know if I should say
I don't want to say our friend.
Our friend who's an amazing, wonderful person. I don't know if she wants to be named though.
Who are we talking about?
Tess.
Oh, this is Tess. Tess. Hi, Tess.
Hi, Tess.
It is
She, I love, I'm like, I don't want to say her name. She dated this guy who was like a real piece of shit. And he was awful. And he would like tag the city, and his tag was books, because then if people would be like, what do you write? He'd be like, I write books.
But you're really depending on people to ask you what you write rather than what you tag or what is that exactly the way people ask?
What do you write?
Books. Yeah, like books. And then even if you get to say that once, like, is it worth it?
No.
I will tell you, I have seen books tagged all around the city of Toronto.
I have too. He really did do it.
You know what? Gotta give it to books.
Give it to books.
Because he can write that one word.
That one. He knows how to spell it so good.
And it's just in like, you know, like it's not even in graffiti. It's always in like silver marker.
Yeah.
You know that one kind of silver marker that's up truly anus in the anus. You know that one type of saliva that I'm talking about.
Smell is like palpable.
It's horrifying. It's like, what is this? I'm like, if I get this on my skin, is it gonna like melt through me? What is this?
It's like mercury. Yeah,
totally. Yeah, it's like pure mercury. It's kind of the energy that it gives me.
I know exactly what pen you're talking about.
All right, well, thank you so much for listening, and we'll be back with another episode of Development Hell.
Thank you for listening to the Dread Podcast Network.